Good evening. Wow, this is wonderful to see all of you. Let's do introductions around. Very nice to see you all. It's so great to sit at the very edge of the year like this, just about to go over the edge and into a new one. Always a new chance, always a new beginning. Isn't that great? Maybe mistake after mistake, but we get to start over, over and over again. So, I've been doing a curious thing, something I haven't done for a long time. Years, actually, come to think of it. I've been sitting all day. I turned off the telephone, I turned off the computer. And it's real quiet at my house because the neighbors are all gone. Everybody's gone. Except the birds and the squirrels. So I have a schedule. I had a schedule. I did a Sesshin schedule for 5 days. The day after I was here, last Tuesday, I went home and started this whole little 5-day Sesshin and sat from 5:30 until 8 in the morning and then straight through the rest of the day with breaks after each meal until 9 o'clock at night. And the first day was real easy. I thought, this is, I was proud of myself, and I was kind of excited, and I bought all this food I was going to cook for myself, and it just was a really wonderful project, one more project. And then, as I kept on sitting, of course, it became a real sit, and in sitting, all those things become less and less important, and it becomes much more focused and much more internal. Dogen talks about stepping back, and it's even in your own house you can step back. I wasn't sure I'd be able to do that. I would see so many things that I had to do, but I gave myself time for doing. So I did a laundry one day because I really needed to, and I had a piece of time for that. It's sort of like the work period in Sesshin. And I had a manuscript of Koban's words about the Lotus Sutra that I'd been asked to edit. And so that was my Dharma talk. I read a little bit of that every day, which was wonderful because my teacher's voice then was appearing for me. It was very, very sweet. And then on Sunday, about the end of a Sunday afternoon, I wasn't feeling very well. And I thought, oh, that's a shame. I have one more day to go, and I'm going to have to stop after 4 days. Well, that's okay. And then I thought, oh, no, this is Sunday. This is 5 days. So I sat all 5 days, losing total track of time of what day it was. I'm not done yet. This is my first foray into the world since I was here last Tuesday. I sit in the morning before breakfast a lot, about 2 hours, and then I sit a couple of hours before I go to bed at night. And in between, I'm doing all kinds of things that I've been wanting to do for a long time. editing more material from Coben and reading other material that I never get to. So I'm kind of storing things up. And I'm doing some writing and lots of reading of poetry and looking at art and letting myself sort of... It feels indulgent, actually, though I don't really think it is. I think it's more like nourishment. It's a little bit like being fed. And I'm telling you this because I want you to know that it's possible and that anyone can do it. If I can do it, anyone can do it. And that there's much in it to of value. One thing I've noticed very much is how slowed down I am and how easy it is to get fast again. And often we're fast even when we don't need to be. Much of our life is we have to keep up with the traffic, we have to keep up with the lines that we're in, we have to keep up with the conversations that are very fast. But there are times when we don't have to keep up at all, and we still do. So, stopping for a while gives one a sense of space. We have a lot more space and time than we know, than we recognize. It really gets quite frantic around this time of year. And it's why it's such a good time to sit, and how many people have real sesshins going. There's one at Felsentor going on, one at Crestone. I think there's one at Hakubai. There are lots of people sitting at this time of year. And with time and space, we have the opportunity to be more discerning, more discriminating about our choices in the words that we speak, in the things that we do. There are an awful lot of times when I just do something because I want to get through it and get to something else. I think that's often the way we do. We're always getting through something to get to something else. And actually, the only place we are is where we're doing something. So trying to get through it isn't only a waste of time, it adds to the confusion. So in our practice, I've been chanting the Heart Sutra in both English and in Sino-Japanese, the Shingyo, and also the Sandokai, one for each meal, and considering a lot about what it is to chant and to offer incense, and to light the candle, all the very small things that we do to prepare for a sit. We don't get to do those things here because fire is a problem. But usually before a sit, you offer a flower if you have one, and you light a candle, and then you offer incense. And each gesture is particular, a very discriminating, particular gesture. This, and then this, and then this. Everything we do is really that way. We pick up the fork, and we get the potato on it. We put down the pencil. we pick up the toothbrush. Each thing that we do is a very particular thing that we do. And often we're just going through it to get somewhere else. So slowing down brings us into it. And any of the things that we develop around this practice can bring us into it. It being where we are and who we are. Not some idea, because often we're in a hurry to get to the idea of ourself and get away from the one that's actually happening. I'll get through this and get to my real me, the really good me, the better me. If I just get through this toothbrushing business, and then it'll be all right. But actually, the real me is the toothbrusher. Not glorious, but reality. And I found with chanting those three different sutras that the best way was not to worry about what they meant. Don't need to know about the meaning so much when we're chanting. We study the Heart Sutra. We keep studying the Heart Sutra, and the meaning then is extremely important. But when we're chanting, something else is happening. One thing, we're using another part of our brain. Our speaking voice and our chanting voice are different. And it's coming from a different place inside us. So again, it's a concentration practice. If we actually participate in the chanting as we chant, word by word, it doesn't matter what it means. Wisdom that we talk about is before we think about it. The wisdom that we talk about is the wisdom that brushes its teeth. And takes care. We talk about moment by moment, but moment by moment is the exact moment, like this one. This one right here. So in chanting, then, we give our whole self to each sound. Coben said once he heard a monk who was famous for his chanting, and it sounded as if it came from his toes, all the way up through his body. Whoa! We can do that too. Shake up the neighbors. The Lotus Sutra part that Coben mostly talked about was the eternal life of the Tathagata, which is a very mysterious part of the middle of the Lotus Sutra. And I hope we all have a chance to study the Lotus Sutra one of these days. It's very mysterious. It's probably the most mysterious thing you'll ever meet. And it's very Indian. It's full of gold and silver and 70 different kinds of jewels, and bodhisattvas arising out of the ground and meeting with the Buddha, and then the Tathagata appear, and then this great stupa rising up into the air. and the Tathagata showing up inside the stupa and inviting Shakyamuni Buddha to come and join him. And his message was, you all thought I died back then, but I didn't. It's about our being alive. In a way, you could say we rose up out of the ground when it was time to meet the Dharma. And came alive to our life. And begin to experience as we sit what a little, what Koban called a little bump of earth we are. Just a little bump of life on a big hunk of it. But life itself goes on. Buddha life, coming and going. The great ocean. Of which we are little waves. And then I got interested, so I read the very last chapter, which is not the, it's another chapter after the last chapter, in which it spells out how to practice. And the way to practice is to notice how we project with our eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and body, how we, and our mind, how we understand the world with our sensations, and how extremely limited they are. So the translation I read used repent. But I would say acknowledge and accept that how limited we are. That's the very basis of our practice, is to know how life is eternal and our participation in life is thorough and completely here and very limited, as well as open-ended completely. Suzuki Roshi's instruction for Zazen was to give your horse a great big field. So I wish us all well. It's been a very strange year, as usual, as always. Next year will be a very strange year as well. And we need to gird our loins with the truth and just be with it and enjoy as much as we can. It's a rare opportunity, this life, and it's brief. So that's enough. Are there questions, comments?
Did you feel more and more connected to your Dharma ancestors and to everyone in the Kichu as the woman that was there. It's part of the deepening that you experience.
Yes. Yes, very much. My teacher especially, I was surprised because he's been gone a long time, and I'm always aware of him as part of my life and practice, but he came up in a lot of different ways, and many, many people. And this group especially, I thought a lot about everybody. I think we're all of a piece. We all are part of the same body. So, yeah. Yeah, thank you. Julian?
This is just a question regarding chanting. I'm with a few people in the household, and I don't know. I mean, I suppose I could. I don't know how you. I feel very subconscious.
I understand. I had to wait many years to be able to do it in my own house all by myself. You know, I lived in a household with lots of people and couldn't possibly do it. Unless I went away, and sometimes I did go away back in the olden days when I had children. I didn't want to burden them with my practice, it just didn't work. So I would go to Vajrapani or up to Point Reyes to the Vedanta Center. And there you can go out into the wilderness and chant all you want to. It's great. And you get your own little space. You know, it's a beautiful place to go do a retreat. But it's been many years since I've done that. But anyone can do that, and they're wonderful. At Vajrapani, they bring the food up to you. You never see anybody, but they bring you a little package of food that's hot for lunch. But in it is enough for dinner as well. And then you already have cereal and milk in the little cabin. So every day you get this hot meal. Left at the top of the path, and you go and say, oh, it must be time for eating, and you go and there's this little package of food. It's wonderful. But otherwise, you're just up there. So there are ways around it if you're living in community. Francois?
Why do we chant? What is the purpose of
chanting? I've often wondered about that or thought about it, because as far as I can see, almost every religious spiritual practice does some kind of chanting. Whether it's the monks, the French monks who did such incredible chanting, or people in Africa, in various tribes, the Navajos, everybody has some version of chanting. And I think it's a release. It's a surrender, in a way. You lose control, in a way, even though you're in control in another way. It's not your own control anymore. And I think that's our aim all the way through, is to release what's holding us back. And if we really give ourselves to the chanting, it does that. Our talking comes from, I've forgotten part, I know the chanting comes from back here, back behind the ears. And the talking comes from another part of the brain. So it's a different experience. It's physically, it's a different experience. Everybody does it.
So not to understand it, but to surrender yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, chanting or singing. So, yeah. We're going to start a new study week after next of the third patriarch's little, it's not known as a sutra, it's really a little poem, but it's like a sutra. I'm going to use a book by Mu Song, trying to think of what it's called. Anybody remember?
Truth of mind.
Trust in mind. Trust in mind. It's a very simple, very, I don't know what adjective to use, but it's a kind of outlining of our mind and how we use it. First sentence is, the great way, the Tao, is without difficulty. Just avoid picking and choosing. We've studied it a couple of times, but it's been a number of years, so it seems like it's time to do this again. The book I'm going to use is by Mu Song, M-U-S-O-E-N-G. I've ordered it from Amazon, but it hasn't come yet. But that's not why we're doing it week after next. It's that next week on the agenda is a Shosan ceremony, which is when the teacher receives questions from the students. Not questions like Francois just asked exactly, but more sharp questions, more pointed questions, more lively questions, things that are challenging on your side and on the teacher's side, both. This is an invitation to all of you to bring your questions. And we'll see what happens. This is usually done after a sesshin, at the very end of a sesshin. So it's a little unusual, so that perhaps it won't be exactly the same, but I thought it would be good to have that experience on both sides. Good for us. It's another way of knowing ourselves and each other. Another way of meeting. So please put it on your calendar next Tuesday.